Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. You're listening to the Medical School HQ podcast online at medicalschoolhq.net, session number 6. Hello, and welcome back to another session here at the Medical School HQ podcast. I am your host, Ryan Gray, and we are the podcast about medical school. From the pre-med process through residency, we hope to take your knowledge of becoming a physician to the next level. I want to wish all of our listeners a very happy and healthy new year. I hope this year brings you much success as you continue your journey to being a physician. For this podcast session, I had a great guest on with me. Russell was kind enough to share his story, including some very personal struggles that he and his family had on his path to medical school. Russell is a non-traditional pre-medical student. He is a 35-year-old music teacher with a wife and 3 children. He decided to pursue a career in medicine late in life and now has been accepted to Michigan State University College of Osteopathic Medicine. As I like to do, I began the interview asking Russell where he is on his path to becoming a physician.
I applied to medical school. I submitted my application, I want to say June 30th, my AMCAS and ACOMAS applications. I think I submitted June 30th. And I got a number of interviews. I think I've interviewed at 4 or 5 places. I was accepted at 2 places. And at this point, I've settled on Michigan State University College of Osteopathic Medicine. There are some places that I haven't heard from that I think if I heard from them, I would have to rethink that decision. But I'm thrilled to be accepted at Michigan State and preparing to get ready for that. I still have to, because I started a little late with the prerequisites and I'm doing, you know, this do my own post-baccalaureate thing, I still have to take biochemistry and genetics for Michigan State. And I have to have them done before the first day of classes. And the first day of classes is June 14th. Okay. So I'll start biochemistry January 7th. And I think genetics starts March 14th.
All right. So you mentioned there are a couple other medical schools that you're still interested in hearing from. What schools are those, if you don't mind?
I don't know that I'll mention them specifically, but there is one school in Ohio that I'm interested in. It was a good school and my wife was offered a position just down the road. So if we relocated there, she would have a job.
Okay, so that's a location convenience factor for your wife.
Right, and so, I mean, I haven't heard anything from them, and it's an MD school, and I think, you know, at this point, maybe I won't.
Okay.
But certainly, if I did, I'd have to think through that very carefully. You know, when we relocate to East Lansing, My wife at this point doesn't have a job, and that's pretty scary. You know, I mentioned in the liner notes that I gave you that my wife has had some medical issues, as have I, and I have a son that has some chronic issues. So no job means no medical insurance, and that's really scary for us.
Yeah. And going into the medical field, you're going to be dealing with patients that are going to be in similar situations. So I think having you go through that experience now hopefully will be valuable to you. Hopefully everything works out, obviously, but hopefully the experience will help you be a better physician on the other end, knowing what your patients may be going through.
I think so. You know, when we were in graduate school at Kent State, from 2006 to 2008, you know, I was downsized from a school in Michigan, and we were in grad school, and I had health insurance for 9 months that was part of my, you know, the COBRA thing, but I didn't have to pay for it because it was part of my negotiated contract as a teacher. And when that ended, my wife and I called around to get private insurance, and we could not get insurance. And in fact, I ended up going about 6 or 7 months with no health insurance whatsoever.
Wow.
My wife eventually had Medicaid. But, you know, I've been through that. And it's, you know, one step away from, you know, financial disaster, really.
Yeah, it can be.
I was lucky I didn't have any major health issues during that time and was eventually able to get health insurance through the university at a significant cost.
Okay.
They had something.
So you're a non-traditional student, and as I'm recording this, it'll be when I publish this, it'll be after an interview that I just did with Rich from oldpremeds.org, the publisher of the oldpremeds.org website. So hopefully our listeners listen to that interview and they kind of know what a non-traditional student is. Where are you in your life?
Well, I'm 35 years old. I'm a school teacher, and this is my 11th year teaching on and off. I did have 2 years as a graduate assistant where I was teaching classes and in there, and then I had 1 year that I took off to deal with some of my son's chronic health issues. But all in all, this is my 11th year teaching. I've been married now our 6th anniversary will be this New Year's Eve. And I have 3 children. I have 5-year-old twins and a 2-year-old. So, I mean, and you know, the bulk of the applying to medical school thing happened starting in May of 2011. Although my wife and I have talked with about that since probably 2003, 2004.
So you've been thinking about going to medical school for almost 10 years now.
Yeah, and to be truthful, you know, maybe I was thinking about it without thinking about it longer than that, and you know, and that was one of the things I was able to talk about in my personal statement. You know, even when I was in middle school, I remember there was a magazine that had a section on the medical field, and it was, you know, sometimes it'd be about health insurance or specific cases, and I just remember that I would turn to that section first, and I just loved reading that section. It was realistic. It wasn't dramatized like some of the stuff on TV, and it was so interesting to me. And then that's not the career path I took at first.
Why
And
is that?
you know, I think there are a lot of reasons. To at some level, I was a successful musician in high school. I was, you know, I was doing very well in that field, and I got a lot of positive reinforcement for that. And I also was able to make a lot of useful connections in the music field that I really struggled making. And I think there are a lot of factors to that. You know, my family was not really gung-ho about, hey, I want you to go be a doctor, I want you to go be a lawyer. They were very, you know, I think it's a good thing. They were very open to, you know, do what you want to do. And find your own way. And so I, you know, I've talked to other people who are like, well, you know, my parents want me to be a doctor or whatever. And I just, my parents missed that message. They didn't relay that to me. So, and I didn't know anyone at the time that was a doctor that I could go to and say, hey, I'm thinking about this. I didn't understand the whole shadowing process. I didn't make those connections. And I did make those connections in music. It ended up in me getting a scholarship for music, as well as an academic scholarship for my undergrad. And in essence, was a full ride scholarship for my undergraduate classes. So there was this huge, you know, convenience thing to, you know, I can do this and, you know, I'm not going to have any debt afterwards. And for the most part, I didn't. So, you know, I enjoyed it and I was doing well in it. I had the connections to get into, you know, the university I wanted to be in and a way to pay for it. So that's the field that I chose. And I don't regret it. I enjoy music. And I think it, you know, once you're a musician, you're always a musician. It's not like I'm going to stop being a musician forever after this. But, you know, it's going to change as far as its role in my life. Okay. And then as I started working in education and in music, this kept coming up about, you know, I kind of am interested in the medical field, at least at, you know, almost like a subconscious level. So, and you had a follow-up question you were going
to
ask?
I wanted to figure out where along the process medicine came drifting back in. And you'd mentioned some health issues with yourself and with your wife and kids. Did that have any role in it?
That is really the tipping point. In 2006, I had just gotten married New Year's Eve in 2005. And in March of 2006, you know, my wife and I had talked about having children. And so she found out through just a pregnancy test that she was pregnant. And she made an appointment with the doctor about two or three days in the future. And by the time she got to the doctor's office, she was miscarrying. Which was, I think, more difficult than on my wife than on me. I think the difficult part for me was seeing my wife go through it. So that was very hard. And that same time period is when I was working in a school district in Michigan, and one of the people who was good friends with me on the school board tipped me off that they were going to downsize me. You know, school districts in Michigan are dealing with declining enrollment and the economy is a mess. So I'm one of the many people that suffered from that. So I knew that my employment was going to end in May. And then we had this going on. And so, you know, we sat down and we talked about it. And, you know, we had good health insurance at the time. We didn't know how long that would last. So we decided to go and see a reproductive endocrinologist. And I should mention, the year before that, my wife had had a pulmonary embolism and was hospitalized for several days.
So some kind of coagulopathy there.
Exactly. And you know, we sat down with the reproductive endocrinologist and we started talking history and mentioned, you know, as part of a medical history that she had had a pulmonary embolism. He's like, oh, okay. And ran a great deal of genetic tests. And my wife has some genetic blood clotting condition. There's four different conditions that she has. Mm. Some are heterozygous, some are homozygous. But I mean, the result of that is that, you know, the ability for my wife to have a child just naturally is almost zero.
Yeah.
So we did that, you know, we dealt with that, and then we were forced, you know, I knew I was going to be like downsized. I was looking for options. I was looking for a plan B. I called one of my music connections at Kent State University and said, this is what's going on. He said, I want your application within 24 hours. They interviewed us and they hired both of us as graduate assistants at Kent State. So again, it wasn't like, you know, I really want to go to Kent State. They've got a great music education program. Not that it was terrible or anything, but it was really, I just need to be somewhere. I need to have some sort of employment. I needed to get a master's degree for teaching anyways. And so it was a convenience thing. And then while we were at Kent State, you know, now we're in a different state. So we went to see a different reproductive endocrinologist. And like I said, I had 9 months of health insurance as part of my union negotiated contract. They would pay for 9 months of the COBRA insurance that you can get when you're laid off, up to 36 months. And so during that 9 months, we said, well, if we're going to do this, this is the only time we're going to be able to do it. So my wife actually underwent IVF. We did 2 cycles of IVF. The first one in June or July, and it ended the same way as the first pregnancy. And then we did another one in October. And the pregnancy lasted 8 weeks, but it ended up being blighted ovum, so a fetus never developed. And my wife had to have a DNC for that. And, right at this point, I'm in the middle of graduate classes. I'm learning about research in my graduate classes. And I'm talking to a doctor who's talking about all these research articles. And, I don't understand some of what he's saying. I'm at a university, so I have access to their online research databases. And I start just reading research so I can understand what the doctor says. And, at the same time...
I have to interrupt you there for 1 second. If your doctor is talking to you in a way that you have to go and look up research articles to understand what he's talking about, he might need to work on his communication skills a little bit more.
No, let me correct that. I mean, he's an excellent communicator.
Okay.
Basics. But we're talking about, my wife has 4 complex genetic conditions. 2 of them I don't even think have a name. They just have a number code to the gene.
Wow.
And then some of the research on like metformin and PCOS was published. We're talking about 2006. That research was published in May of 2006.
Okay.
So we're talking about relatively new stuff. I mean, and pretty research heavy stuff. He explains the basics of it, but for me, I need to know more than that. I need to know what's going on.
Okay.
So that was a really emotional time, and it was really hard for my wife and I. I was getting sick at the time, but it was also really enjoyable to read that research. And there was a moment, sometime November, December, where I thought, I think I'm in the wrong field. I think this is, this is where I need to be. And I know that being a doctor isn't all just, doing research necessarily. I mean, I suppose there are some doctors that do that, but... I mean, there was a realization of what I sort of felt maybe subconsciously all along. And here it was like, this is it. This is what I need to be doing. And I've missed this. We talked about this when my wife was pregnant with the twins. And at the time, my wife was like, so what? I'm pregnant with twins. This is what we're doing right now. You have to put that aside. And she was right to say that,
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't till after we actually had after the twins were born, I took a job in Western Ohio. My son, one of the twins, has reactive airway disease and asthma and some chronic ear infection stuff. And so I ended up leaving that position to deal with his medical needs. My wife stayed working. My wife actually got pregnant naturally again and then lost another pregnancy. And then after that, we had, and this is, we had frozen embryos from the successful cycle that the twins were born with. And we were paying to freeze them. And my wife and I were talking about what do you do with frozen embryos? You can destroy them. You can put them up for adoption. You can transfer them, or you can donate them to science. And at least for us personally, the only choice we were really the most comfortable with was transferring it. So we did that, and our third child, Russell, was born through that. And he happened to be born the year that I was off work. And after that, finally, we've got three children, all that's wrapped up. I took another teaching position when my son's health was improving. And then we sat down and my wife said, okay, you're right. You're in the wrong field. Let's see what we have to do. And so from March 2010 to May 2011 was, you know, gathering information, deciding how to do this. And then I started classes in May of 2011 to prepare for it.
And the classes that you're talking about are a post-bac program?
Well, I didn't even know post-bac programs existed. I probably would have done it a lot easier had I known. But I also live in a really rural area, and there's a branch campus that offers some of the classes I need close by, but there's no major university. You know, the major university that ended up taking some of my classes is an hour and a half drive away. So I took, you know, I really assembled my own post-baccalaureate program. I did some at the branch campus in town. I did some at the main university an hour and a half away. I took some classes from Oregon State University. They have this e-campus hybrid online class thing. So there's some online portion and some in-person portion. And so I put that all together into this make my own post-bac program. And I didn't really find out about post-bac programs until I went to the old pre-meds conference. When did I go to that? This summer, I guess. 2012.
In Orlando?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. How did you find the old pre-meds?
I just, you know, when my wife were wife and I were talking about, you know, I wanted to do this, I just started doing research, and the first thing that came up was studentdoctor.net. I think it's studentdoctor.net.
Yeah.
And then somewhere along the line, I don't know if, I can't remember now if there's a forum, because I don't go to that website too often, there was a link to the old pre-meds thing. And so I went to the site, and it's just like, oh, this is so helpful, because, you know, in a lot of ways, I didn't know what I was doing as far as preparing for medical school. So.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good site to prepare. In your kind of feedback that you gave to me, you had mentioned that you are or were more interested in applying to and going to a DO schools or osteopathic schools over an MD school. Why is that?
My sister-in-law is a DO, and, you know, growing up, my parents almost exclusively took us to DOs for, you know, family practice, pediatric treatment, and I've had very good experience with that. And I also think that, you know, DOs have it right in a lot of ways as far as the holistic approach to medicine, and that, you know, everything relates to everything else. And I think, you know, if I were an MD, I'd still believe that, and it would probably still be part of my practice. But I might as well, I mean, if, you know, if I've got a school that sort of agrees with that, then I kind of would prefer to go there.
So you went through, you did your kind of a do-it-yourself post-bac program, and you took the MCAT and applied for MD DO schools. How competitive were you, if you don't mind? What kind of grades did you have? What kind of MCAT score did you have?
My grades have always been strong, and in the post-bac program, I did 65 credits of post-bac on quarters from May 2011 to September 2012 while I was working full-time, and I had a job in the evening as well. So I was working two jobs, taking 65 credits over that time. And I have a 4.0, except for the very first class I took in May 2011 was Chemistry 231, and I got a B+. It's the first chemistry class I had in 17 years. And, you know, I probably could have done better than that. I just made stupid mistakes because I just, some of the vocabulary stuff I didn't have, you know.
Well, so, I'm surprised you got into med school. Yeah, with 1B+, I mean, that's kind of...
Well, I have significantly more than 1B+, but in the sciences, my GPA is very, very good. So okay. I think I'm very competitive that way.
Yes, my sounds GPA, like it.
Or my MCAT is not as competitive. I only have a 28. But I went about it all wrong, and I probably would do it differently now. I didn't do any Kaplan whatever prep course. I just did a couple of, really just a couple of practice tests on the AMCAS or, you know, AAMC website. And then took the MCAT in the middle of organic chemistry, physics, and I forget what other class I was taking three classes. In the middle of those classes, the last organic chemistry of the three-class series, the last physics of the three-class series, and I can't remember what the other class was. And right in the middle of that, took the MCAT. And I think, boy, if I'd prepared for it, I would have done better. So, I mean, that's really modulated and mediated my competitiveness, I think. I think I would have been more competitive with a higher MCAT score.
How many practice tests did you take?
Two.
Wow.
Two.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, live and learn. I think a 28 is a great score based on the kind of preparation that you put into it. And I'd be surprised if you prepared even with a couple more practice tests, you would have scored off the charts, I think.
Yeah, and I really think if I had taken biochemistry before I took it, I think that would have helped, even though it's not supposed to be on there.
Yeah, well, it is now.
Well, the new ones, I think it starts in
2015, yeah. There's the trial section they're putting in for 2013 and 2014 that you don't have to take, but it's recommended.
So, in some ways, having that 28 has been problematic more so than having either a higher or a lower score. Because, you know, if it were lower, I would have just withheld my application and retaken it and done a prep course and that. And if it were higher, I wouldn't have had to do that. I would have been a good applicant. But it's that in-between thing where it's really high enough that I don't necessarily want to delay my application and retake it. But then when I go to interviews, and this has happened a couple of times, I think, and I try to explain, you know, where I am with this score, it looks like I'm not serious about medical school. Like this is sort of just a flippant, you know, oh, I guess I'll just take the MCAT thing, which is not what it was. But, you know, it's been a difficult thing to deal with in interviews.
Interesting. Now, as a non-traditional student coming in a little bit older, more life experience, do you find there's a difference between DO and MD in the application process and going through your interviews?
I think DOs are more open to non-traditional students. At least it certainly seems that way to me.
In what respect? Why do you think that?
I guess I don't really know. It's just that when you go into the interview, when I've interviewed for MD schools, I've been traditionally the only non-traditional student in the room. You know, there'll be 10 students interviewing and every student will be under the age of 24 except for me. And the students that give you the little tour of campus are all under 24 or 25. And I mean, at the MD schools, I've really been the only non-traditional student. And then I think in interviews, you know, listen, I'm 35 years old and, you know, some 23-year-old comes into that medical interview and they're so excited to get an interview and go to medical school. They're like maybe a giddy little school child, you know. I'm 35 years old. I'm not in that point in my life. I'm glad to be going to medical school, but I'm not going to be jumping all up and down. And so maybe it seems like I don't really want to be there. But it's you know, I'm at a different point in my life. And I think DO schools are more open to that. And I can talk to them and they listen to my words more than look at my demeanor. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
And with DO schools, I will say that each one that I've interviewed for, I have not been the only non-traditional student.
So you felt a little bit different with the interviewers. You were surrounded by a little bit more of your peers at the DO schools.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, it seems to be a general, the general consensus is that DO schools are a little bit more friendly to non-traditional students. I just wanted to hear your take on it.
Oh. Yeah, and I do think they are. And
yeah, How many schools did you apply to?
I applied to somewhere around 20. I think it maybe 18 or 19. I applied to 9 MD schools, maybe. Most of the schools in Ohio are MD schools. And I applied to maybe 10 DO schools.
Okay. And those schools were chosen based on what parameters?
The bulk of them were chosen, you know, because I've straddled my life between Michigan and Ohio, there is some amount of opportunity to get in-state tuition and in-state residency in Michigan and Ohio. So most of the schools I applied to were in Michigan and Ohio. There are a few outliers that I applied to. I have an acquaintance that goes to a school in the Midwest, more west of the Midwest, and encouraged me to apply there, so I did. There are a few outliers, but most are in that area. And they're mostly good schools. I mean, Ohio has some good medical schools.
Yeah.
As does Michigan. So, I mean, I can't really complain there that I limited my, you know, call to this area.
Okay.
What? You know, if Ohio State University calls me and wants to interview me, I will probably have to take that interview.
Okay. What was one of the harder questions that you got on the interview trail?
Explaining my MCAT score. And why it wasn't, you know, it's a disconnect. You know, here I have this grade point average, which is like 3.95 or something, and then only a 28 on the MCAT. So explaining that and explaining, you know, why I didn't take the MCAT more seriously, those questions were, you know, they're hard for me to answer. I don't have a really good answer. This is how things happened. I was doing 65 credits and working two jobs and doing everything I can, you know, it can't be perfect. So it's hard to come up with a good answer for those questions. Why as a non-traditional student, do you want to go to medical school? I know the answer, but people who don't normally work with non-traditional medical students don't always get the answer, even if you say it. So that's a struggle. I mean, I think if you were a non-traditional student interviewing, you really have to very carefully word that answer and try to find a way, and I haven't found a good way to connect with someone who's not used to dealing with non-traditional students, but if you could, that'd be an advantage.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, the fact that the person receiving the answer might not truly understand or accept the answer because they're not used to it.
Yeah, I mean, people hear what they want to hear regardless of what you're saying. And it's hard to explain to a person, you know, what motivates you to do something when they're so far removed from that situation.
Well, I want to end with a quick question that I like to ask, and it's, what do you know now that you wish you knew going into the whole pre-med process?
I wish I'd known that they were set up post-baccalaureate programs that you could just go and do. That, for one thing, that probably would have been easier.
Okay.
I don't know. I wish I would have just done this earlier. You know, I could have just maybe gone and done this when I was downsized in 2006 and been farther ahead. So I just wish I hadn't waited to do it. But at the same time, my life experiences are what they are, and, you know, I don't regret them. It's part of who I am.
Yeah, and I think that it gives you a good story to tell, and you have told on the interview trail, like, as we had talked about earlier. I think it's a great experience having that life experience behind you as you go through medical school, as you try to handle the daily stresses of medical school, the daily stresses of the clinical rotations, and then internship and residency. I think you'll have a different perspective coming in, having your life experiences, and knowing that every minute of the day is not the end of the world, that there's more outside of what you're doing at that exact minute. And I found, because I took 3 years off between medical school and undergrad, and it, just taking those 3 years off, it gives you perspective to know that there's more, and to take a breath and calm down, and you'll survive.
Well, and that's true. I've certainly learned in my life not to get worked up about things that, especially if you can't change the situation, you know, to learn to let go of those things and move on.
Well, folks, there you have it. That was our interview with Russell. I hope you got some valuable information from Russell as he shared a lot of great information about his struggles to get to medical school. If you have any questions, you can go ahead and give us a call on our question voicemail line, 617-410-6747, or shoot us an email through our website at medicalschoolhq.net. As always, you can find our show notes at medicalschoolhq.net/session6. I hope the information provided today will help better guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Make sure to join us next time here at the Medical School Headquarters.